Today, Donaldson and Tulowitzki return. Rougned Odor's in town. The Jays open an important homestand against Texas.
Things have happened that, you know, we didn't expect. So, we're fortunate to be in the position we are, that we're adding him now and our team's still in it, and that we have Josh Donaldson to add to our team.
Today, we pay tribute. What the Penguins are accomplishing is amazing. What Ottawa accomplished is amazing also.
Here's Crosby, a quick turn back. Crosby, back in front. Kunitz with a shot. Scores! Kunitz over the shoulder of Anderson. And the Pittsburgh Penguins win it in double overtime.
Today, Cleveland, Golden State. Can you feel the anticipation? That's nice. The series doesn't start for a week.
This is the Scott MacArthur Show on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
What's up? It's Friday, and I just went for a stroll outside. There's actually like some warmth in the air, so I'm counting on a weekend of warmth. I haven't looked at the forecast. I have no idea what's coming, but I'm counting on it because we are owed some big from yesterday. That was crazy with all the flooding in our neighborhoods. But onward and upward, and we've got a jam-packed show today. We've got everything covered for you. The Blue Jays are back home. They've got Texas in for three. Pick your storyline. It's like a kid on Halloween. Which candy do you want next? You got Donaldson and Tulowitzki back in the lineup. You've got Rougned Odor and the Texas Rangers in town. And why is that a big deal? Well, we know these two teams don't like each other, but keep this in mind. It's easy to forget this fact. A, because it was a year ago, and B, because they have played since. But the last time these two teams met in a regular season game, not the playoffs, a regular season game, it was last May, it was in Arlington, Texas, and it's when Rougned Odor punched Jose Bautista in the face. And what do they say about retribution? You don't typically get retribution in the playoffs, right? Too much is at stake. You're not going to commit a suspendable act in the playoffs. It's Mike Bolsinger on the mound tonight. Is he the fall guy? And I'm not for baseball's retribution culture. I am not advocating for this, but I have absolutely no idea what to expect with this game tonight. Will Mike Bolsinger stick a pee on Rougned Odor? And Bolsinger doesn't throw 98 miles per hour, but the sense that I get is that anything is possible. I am not going to come on the radio today and say this issue's been put to bed. In my opinion, it should have been put to bed. The Jays got the last laugh last year. The greatest retribution is sticking it to your enemy by beating them on the field. And that's what the Blue Jays did. That sign that the fan brought to the home game the Jays played, the clinching game three against Texas in the division series last year, was perfect. I'd rather get punched in the face in May than get knocked out in October. And that's, of course, what happened to the Texas Rangers. The Jays did have the last laugh, but what we know about pro athletes, what we know about baseball players, is that they've got long memories. And even if the Jays aren't looking for retribution in particular, I'm thinking that figurative gasoline will be littered around the field tonight and through the weekend. And if somebody, unplanned even, if somebody brings along a figurative match, boom, the whole thing could go. Who knows? I mean, this rivalry is that intense now that anything is possible. And that's what you get with back-to-back playoff appearances and back-to-back years playing each other in the playoffs. That's what you get with the bat flip. That's what you get with fiery personalities like Jose Bautista and Rougned Odor. Anything is possible. The one thing, though, that I hope doesn't happen is that and everything I just said overshadowing the importance of this homestand for the Blue Jays. They've got 10 games here. They've got Texas in town. The Rangers, like the Jays, got off to a terrible start, but then Texas bounced back. They've actually fallen back to 500 because they lost the final three games of their series at Fenway Park with the Red Sox. So they come into this thing 24-24. Generally speaking, they have been playing well of late, with the exception of the last few days. So their season has taken on the same track as the Jays. Then you've got Cincinnati coming in. And let's be honest, there's Joseph Votto and not much else. And I haven't looked at the way that the Reds pitching will play out Monday to Wednesday. But do you remember Scott Feldman? Not the Feldman from Bizarro Seinfeld episode. Scott Feldman, the guy that the Jays went and got at the trade deadline last year, then pitched a handful of times in August and was so bad that John Gibbons was like, yeah, I can't really use this guy. He never really said that, but actions speak louder than words, and I don't think we saw Scott Feldman the final 3 weeks of the regular season, and we definitely didn't see him in the playoffs because he didn't make the roster. Scott Feldman pitched opening day, started opening day for the Cincinnati Reds. That's about all you need to know about the Cincinnati Reds. And in a division with the Cubs and the Cardinals and the Brewers and even the Pirates, Pirates are off to a bad start. Cincinnati is the worst of those five the Jays need to make hay. And that would lead into the crucial four-game series that will begin next Thursday when the New York Yankees come to town. So it's a 10-game homestand. Donaldson and Tulowitzki are back. Rougned Odor's in town. Texas is here. We'll see how it plays out, and we have you covered over the course of the afternoon here on the Scott MacArthur Show, talking Blue Jays. We'll get to our baseball roundtable in studio with me at 1:30. Scotty Mitchell, TSN 1050's Blue Jays reporter, and from The Athletic Toronto, he's doing great work. My good buddy Israel Fair will be here as well. So we'll do a roundtable. We'll talk Jays, Rangers, and Odor. We'll talk Donaldson's and Tulowitzki's return to the Blue Jays lineup, and with Jay Happ having made a rehab start for single-A Dunedin last night, I think what you're looking for from Happ isn't so much about results. He did give up three runs in three innings. Who cares? How are you feeling today? And as long as there's progression there, he can go on and he can contribute 4 days from now. And where will he contribute? Because I don't know if you've looked at the Blue Jays starting rotation and the way it's laid out. But Tuesday, there's a big TBD beside the Blue Jays' name and underneath the starting pitcher for that game against Cincinnati. Could it be Jay Happ, or do they need to take the careful route with this guy and give him at least one more minor league rehab start? 50 to 60 pitches yesterday. If you bump that up to 75 or 80, what's the difference between throwing to single-A hitters and big league hitters? Well, the main difference is they can crush mistakes at the big league level. But if you're going to throw the pitches, throw them up here, because what's the alternative for Toronto? Who's going to be better than Jay Happ? Somebody could be, but really would be the luck of the draw, because they were hot on that particular day. So I'll ask Scotty Mitchell and Israel if they think Jay Happ will be back in time for Tuesday's game against Cincinnati, or will the Jays leave him down in the minors for another start or two? Got plenty of hockey talk. Gino Retta will be along at 3 o'clock. TSN 1050 is your home for the Indy 500 starting at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. Davey Hamilton, Advanced Auto Parts IndyCar Radio Network analyst, will be along at 2:30 to talk about that. Toronto FC has a home game tonight. Gareth Wheeler will join me at 3:20 to preview that. Toronto FC and the Columbus Crew. We'll get Steve Phillips, TSN, TSN 1050 Blue Jays insider, in the 3 o'clock hour as well. It is time for that daily public service announcement we do here off the top on the Scott MacArthur Show. Jays have had a bunch of injuries this year, which means they've had a bunch of called up players, and I feel the need to introduce them to you, so here's the next one.
Who the f*** is this Blue Jay?
Now, I'm throwing you a curveball today. I'm introducing you to somebody that really doesn't need an introduction. This is a reintroduction, because you haven't seen him in a while. Who the bleep is this Blue Jay? Well, let me throw some numbers at you, but you can play the guessing game. I'm not just going to tell you who it is. I got to be real careful here about how I lay this out, because there are some hints that are really going to give it away real quick. Last year, his batting slash line, average 284. On base, 404. Slugging, 549. Year before that, batting average, 297. On base, 371. Slugging, 568. led the league with 352 total bases. Led the league in 2015 with 122 runs scored and 123 RBI. Oh, and he also hit 41 home runs. Last year, 37 home runs. This year, 9 games played, 310 batting average, 429 on base, 586 slugging. Already 4/10 of a win value to his team in 9 games. So if he is worth 1 win per 18 games, you prorate that over 162 games, he's a 9-win player. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, this should give it away. 2015 American League MVP. He is Joshua Adam Donaldson, who, despite his injury, continues to be good at baseball and will return for the Blue Jays tonight. I've run out of minor leaguers to tell you about, so I thought I'd fill you in on one of the returning guys. Josh Donaldson, back in the lineup for the Blue Jays tonight. This public service announcement is a daily feature on the Scott MacArthur Show.
Who the f*** is this Blue Jay?
I had a couple choices today. Donaldson or Tulowitzki. I think it was pretty obvious. JD, back in the lineup. We'll also talk with Scotty Mitchell and Israel Fear in a few minutes about their batting order for tonight. This was a big theme on the program yesterday. I like the notion of Pilar 1, Travis 2, Donaldson 3 out of the gate. I'm getting some blowback, though. Many responses on Twitter want to see Donaldson hitting second. The way I see it right now, you can't go wrong. Pilar's doing well in the leadoff spot. Travis is red hot. But Donaldson won an MVP award hitting second. You can't go wrong. The thing I'll remind you about, though, when we talk about lineups is how I feel about tonight isn't necessarily how I'm going to feel about the lineup 2 weeks from now, because guys get hot, they go into slumps, whatever. We'll see how John Gibbons draws it up. We'll find that out probably at about 3:30. Scotty Mitchell, Israel Fear for the roundtable at 1:30, so 15 or so minutes from now. Coming up on the other side, the Pittsburgh Penguins. There's been a lot of talk, and rightfully so, about what the Ottawa Senators, as underdogs, accomplished in these playoffs. But let's really go through what the Pittsburgh Penguins have accomplished here. Nothing to sneeze at. Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Marc-Andre Fleury, / Matt Murray. This team will compete for the Stanley Cup for a second consecutive year. And it is the second time in the salary cap era, the Crosby-Malkin era, where the Penguins have made it to back-to-back Stanley Cup finals. I thought that wasn't supposed to happen anymore. What does that say about this team? We'll talk about it next. The Scott MacArthur Show, TSN 1050.
Kunitz with the puck now. Moving back. Goes to Sheary down the right wing. Back to Kunitz in front. He shoots and scores! Chris Kunitz gets his first goal this playoff year! And the Penguins get the opening goal and lead 1-0. My face with a rusty razor. It is Chris Kunitz, the goal scorer.
Say this for Mike Lang. You shave his face with a rusty razor. I don't know what hurts more, that or having your back scratched with a hacksaw. But there are the Pittsburgh Penguins again in the Stanley Cup final. And we began to touch on this yesterday in anticipation of this happening. And I just want to say before we get into the very serious sports talk here that I want to send a shout out. I'm downtown today, by the way, because I'm going to run over to the Blue Jays game for some pregame stuff right after this show ends. So I'm downtown today. Uncle Shawnee is up in Agent Court. And it rained heavy yesterday. And there were puddles that shut down roads, like on Lakeshore and stuff. There are puddles up in Agent Court today from Uncle Shawnee's tears. But I say this seriously. Uncle Shawnee, I'm sorry about your team. And I really meant it. Like, Shawnee and I were texting last night, and Shawnee took it better than I did. Because I was engrossed in that game, and I just know when your favorite team is playing, particularly a seventh game, if it loses, you're so, it's like the biggest adrenaline rush, and then bam, like head may as well hit pillow. And you just want to crash and fall asleep and forget about it. Because you're living with every moment, right? You're honed in on the TV, or if you're at the game, you're living the experience with the crowd around you and you're watching the game. And you could hear the gasps in the crowd every time the puck got near Pittsburgh's net in overtime. People were like, uh-oh. Because if that puck goes in, the game's over and your season's over. And it ends in a flash. And it took me right back to Game 6, Leafs and Capitals. And, of course, Toronto got eliminated in overtime. And there's no tougher way to lose if you're a fan of a team. I'm asking you this on Twitter today. Hit me up at Scotty Mac Thinks. That's my personal account. The station's account is at TSN 1050 Radio. This is our poll question today. What is more impressive in terms of an accomplishment in the salary cap era? The Chicago Blackhawks winning 3 Stanley Cups in 6 years, or the Pittsburgh Penguins going to back-to-back Stanley Cup finals twice? Now remember, Pittsburgh and Detroit did it together in 2008 and 2009. Mike Babcock's Red Wings won the 08 Cup. Sidney Crosby's and Dan Bylsma's Penguins won the 09 Cup. Pittsburgh obviously won the Stanley Cup last year against San Jose, and they're going to attempt to do it again this year against Nashville. What is more impressive? And I can be persuaded in either direction on this. We got about 100 votes inside the first hour. 72% of you are saying that the Chicago situation, 3 cups in 6 years, is more impressive. But put this into context. Think about what the Pittsburgh Penguins have accomplished here again in the salary cap era, where you have to pare down because you identify your 3, 4, 5 best players. You sink a significant portion of your salary commitment into those guys, and then you fill in the blanks around them, right? And we've celebrated the Chicago Blackhawks' ability to identify their core, but then have to divest themselves of real crucial players over the years. Like Brandon Saad would be the guy who stands out the most. But the decision was made by Stan Bowman that it's John Taves, it's Patty Kane, it's Marian Hossa, it's Corey Crawford, it's Duncan Keith, and it's Brent Seabrook. They're your 5 skaters and your goalie. And the Pittsburgh Penguins, it's Sid Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, who didn't even play in the playoffs because he was hurt. It's Matt Murray now. It was Marc-Andre Fleury. Based on salary, it absolutely is Phil Kessel at this juncture. And they've managed to fill in the blanks around these guys. And there was the old dog, old Yeller, man. Like this guy, in terms of an NHL career, he's almost behind the barn. And the you-know-what's pointed at the skull. But there's Chris Kunitz, goalless in 34 games, stepping up in Game 7, scoring twice, including the overtime winner, and assisting on the only goal Pittsburgh scored that didn't come off his stick. There's the hero. Right? Crosby made a great play in overtime to get Kunitz the puck. And one of the great joys of last night's game, really for the entire series, but last night, and particularly as it got to overtime when everything was on the line, was watching Sid Crosby and Erik Karlsson go at each other. Crosby created a scoring chance, I want to say it was about halfway through the first overtime period, where he pickpocketed Karlsson, just won the puck off him in front of the Ottawa net. Now I'm thinking to myself, there probably isn't another forward in that game, maybe Malkin if he's working hard for it, but there aren't a lot of other forwards in that game or in the league that could have pickpocketed Karlsson that way and created a scoring chance as a result. I mean, it was a war of attrition, it was a war to the end, and it was awesome stuff. And this Penguins team, with its core, has played a ton of hockey over the last, what are we, at the end of May 2017? So let's go back to October of 2015. What's that, 18, 19 months? Think about all the hockey they've played. A full regular season last year, all the way to the Stanley Cup a year ago. You spin that around with a short summer. You come back, you've got a World Cup, and because the Pittsburgh Penguins have many, many notable great players, Crosby at the top of the list, Malkin at the top of the list. We know Kessel should have been on the U.S. team. Another example. These guys, their standouts, were playing in the World Cup. And then they come to training camp, and then they've got another 82 games, and then they've got more playoff hockey, and they had to go seven games against Washington. Kind of, sort of their own doing, but they had to. Then they go seven against the Ottawa Senators, and they look dead in the water after the third game. They'd gotten pumped. They were down 2-1. They'd looked worn out. They had injuries. And here they are. By the end of this series, the Pittsburgh Penguins, in the last 19 or 20 months, will have played approximately 220 hockey games of consequence. And that doesn't count the international stuff at the World Cup, and it doesn't count preseason action. Approximately 220 games in about 20 months. It is an incredible accomplishment. Salary cap era aside, these aren't the days of the 6 or 12 team NHL where you play your regular season and then you've got one, maybe two rounds of playoffs. You get right to the final, or you've got the semifinals right away, then you play the finals and boom, it's over by the end of April, early May. This Penguins team, I'll be fascinated to watch them next year, just with all the hockey they've played. We have talked about the fact that the Washington Capitals are probably going to take a step back just because of the number of moves that they have to make. We've discussed the likelihood that the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to be a much better team next year and make the playoffs. Where will the Florida Panthers slot in 2 years off a 100-point season, 1 year removed from a really disappointing season where their front office was an absolute mess? Who's going to get better? Who's going to get worse? And we always put it into the broader conversation about the likelihood of the Toronto Maple Leafs making the playoffs next season. Where will the Pittsburgh Penguins fall in? They've got such tremendous high-end talent. They clearly have tremendous resilience. I would expect them to be there. But at what point is there a price to pay for all the hockey they've played? And this Stanley Cup final, you've got the elite front-end talent of the Pittsburgh Penguins playing that elite defensive core of the Nashville Predators. And I wonder to what extent the Ryan Johansson injury is going to affect Nashville's ability to score enough to win this series. Matt Murray, a brilliant young goaltender who, honestly, until I was watching him play every other night, I was busy with baseball last year. I wasn't able to keep as close an eye on him. Now that I'm watching him play each and every night since he's come in, you really get an appreciation for how good he is. Pekka Rinne, who was kind of entering that old Yeller phase of his career 3 or 4 months ago, bounced back with a great second half, and he's been brilliant in these playoffs. So between the two goaltenders, one young, one old, between the forwards of the Penguins and the defense of the Nashville Predators, I think we're going to have a tight, entertaining series here. And the question will be, will Nashville be able to score enough to really give the Pittsburgh Penguins a scare here? I think it's going to be a long series. I really do. And I think it's going to be really entertaining. And I think it's fantastic. You really couldn't lose once Nashville beat Anaheim. You're going to have two fantastic environments, whether it's Ottawa, Nashville, Pittsburgh, Nashville. You're going to get two fantastic environments, and I don't think Nashville is going to waste this opportunity to turn their home games into a massive party. And I will be jealous of anybody who has the opportunity to go down there and cover those games, or to just go down there and watch those games and be in the environment. Because if you ever knock it, include it on a bucket list and knock it off one day. If you can get down to Nashville and see a hockey game, Bridgestone Arena is right on Broadway, right downtown. Tootsie's Orchid Lounge and the rest of the honky-tonks are literally 500 feet down the street. There is, Toronto included, with its rink right downtown, the Bell Center, downtown Montreal, I include those cities. The setup in Nashville is, in my opinion, as good as it gets. It's going to be fantastic stuff. So I'm hitting you up for this. What's more impressive in terms of an accomplishment in the salary cap era? The Chicago Blackhawks and their 3 Stanley Cups in 6 years, or the Pittsburgh Penguins with Sid and Malkin making back-to-back Stanley Cup finals twice. This is not dissimilar from a question like, what's more impressive, winning one Super Bowl or doing what the Buffalo Bills did in the early 1990s? Not winning a Super Bowl, but making four consecutive Super Bowls. And I would argue, in a lot of circumstances, even though they didn't win a Super Bowl, what the Bills did to get there in four consecutive years is as impressive or more than any team that won one. This Penguins team, in a salary cap era with all the hockey it's played, this is an incredible, incredible accomplishment by Sid Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Phil Kessel, that whole team. We'll get back into hockey talk with Gino Retta at the top of the 3 o'clock hour. We're talking Indy 500 this afternoon. Toronto FC, they're home to Columbus Crew. You can hear that tonight on TSN 1050 with Gareth Wheeler at 7 o'clock. Steve Phillips to talk some baseball. That's at 3:30. And we're going to talk Blue Jays, Rangers, MLB for the next hour. Scotty Mitchell, TSN's Blue Jays reporter, Israel Fear of The Athletic Toronto, in studio for a roundtable that starts next. This is the Scott MacArthur Show on TSN 1050. Well, the real debate with the roundtable here is where to even begin this conversation. We get the air conditioning on in here, so we're getting a nice sort of breeze, but I'm feeling heat from the other side of the table. I'm feeling a hot take from the other side of the table because something got said in the previous commercial break by Israel Fear that, well, Scotty and I, you know, we visited Fangraphs a few times today. Maybe we'll take umbrage with. Maybe there's reason for excitement. Israel Fear says the Blue Jays are good again. Now, he didn't walk in with his Make the Blue Jays Great Again hat. But I think he's liking where this team is trending. So we're going to figure all this out. We're going to talk Rougned Odor because he's our favorite person, and we have to. And we're going to discuss the American League East and see where the Blue Jays fit in. So let's do the pleasantries and the introductions. Our baseball roundtable is brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln, your premier source for auto service and sales in the GTA. First up, he is Scott Mitchell, TSN, TSN 1050's Blue Jays reporter. What is up?
No, I didn't hear what he said, but whatever you just said implies that he said before that they were bad. So they're good again, which means they were already bad. Have they been bad?
They were very, very bad, like in April, were they not?
Oh.
Or are you, don't be the small sample size police. Dude, it's Friday. I want to kick back.
I'm not going to start with you. Don't worry.
No yelling. No yelling at me. I'm very sensitive today. I need my safe space. Israel Fear of The Athletic Toronto is with us as well. What's up, brother?
Good to be here, Scotty.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I'm going to put your feet to the fire. Okay. So we got to talk Odor, and we'll get into the whole Texas thing. And this is, even though it's been a long time, the first regular season game these two teams have played against each other since that baseball game in Arlington where a boxing match broke out.
Yeah.
But we'll set that aside for a second. We need to figure out where this Blue Jays team is at because the left side of the infield returns tonight. Josh Donaldson, Troy Tulowitzki back in the lineup. They've won three in a row coming off the road trip. This is a 10-game homestand, three with Texas, three with Cincinnati, three with the New York Yankees. And they seem to be getting healthy five games under 500. Is your sense, I'll start with you, Scotty, and Israel, you piggyback, is your sense that this team is ready to make a push?
I think they're in position to, whether they're ready or not. I mean, obviously, you got your guys back. You did what you needed to do over the past four, five, 6 weeks. When Troy Tulowitzki went down, they were 7.5 games out. 7.5 games out now. I mean, I think what we've seen over this past month is maybe the depth isn't as bad as we thought it was on this team, or maybe that depth just stepped up and did a tremendous job. But with these two guys back, now you're just waiting on that rotation. To me, that's the key.
Yeah, it's going to be a process, an ongoing process, but this is the first step. You get Josh Donaldson back, an MVP caliber guy, a guy that's been as good as anyone not named Mike Trout in baseball over the last 4 or 5 years. You get Troy Tulowitzki, who may not be the player that he was in Colorado, but is still a very good shortstop, and they're coming in and they're replacing guys in Chris Coughlin, Darwin Barney, Ryan Goins, who, to their credit, filled in admirably, but are ultimately bench guys, replacement level guys, and they did very well over the last 5 or 6 weeks. But I think that if you're going to play that over, you're going to see lesser results, and you need these guys to be here. Once the pitching, and there's good news about Jay Happ, good news about Francisco Liriano, the Aaron Sanchez conversation is a different one. That's something that's definitely frustrating for fans and for the organization, and certainly for Sanchez himself. That will be the next step. But tonight, you get two all-star caliber guys back in the lineup. You definitely have to feel good starting the homestand that way.
Okay, so let's digress for a second here, because I don't want to spend too much time on this, but you've got something you've got to get off your chest, because you've been seeing it on social media. I've been hearing about it on radio. I've been reading it myself. I've been getting people chiming in telling me this. Let's get real about Ryan Goins, okay? He's been fine. He's had moments. But you've got something coming up, I think, on The Athletic a little bit later on today that he ties into. What is it you would like to say about the bald-headed wonder kind, not named Scott Mitchell?
I think that it's great that the fans have appreciated the way that he has played. He stepped up. That's not an easy thing to do. So I'm prefacing this as all the positive stuff. It's not an easy thing to do to be dropped into a major league lineup and play shortstop and play the position well defensively, especially when you're replacing a player like Troy Tulowitzki. That there's even a conversation that Ryan Goins should remain the shortstop going forward over Troy Tulowitzki is, in my opinion, completely crazy. He stepped up in some good spots, but you're looking at his general offensive numbers. They're very much in line with what he did the last 2 years when he was close to being the 25th man on the roster. Let's not forget that he was on the bubble for this team going into spring training. All of a sudden, he's going to be the starting shortstop for this team. It might just be one of these fan things that happens every once in a while.
Is that a conversation on Twitter?
It has been.
I've seen some love and hate. Ryan Goins seems to be such a lightning rod. I don't really understand why. Is it because he's bald? Is that the deal?
Okay, look, let's not be too sensitive here. Let's not be too sensitive. It's got nothing to
do... No, because I could see that being the reason.
It's got nothing to do with his follic capabilities, okay? That's not the reason.
Don't judge us on that, ever.
Okay. All right. And I haven't to this point. I won't start now. Here's the thing. It sounds disrespectful, so I'm not... The casuals, I guess, will say, I remember the Grand Slam in Milwaukee. I remember the big home run in that home game a couple of weeks ago. He seems to be rounding the bases a lot. And you have the reputation of being a great defender. The analytics crowd will tell you... And you can look at Fangraphs and it'll back it up, that this guy is very much, at best, a replacement-level player. And so you end up with the Twitter argument. Joe Q Public says, I love Ryan Goins. And Franklin F. Statistics says, get lost, buddy. Goins is terrible. And then people start yelling at each other, which is what Twitter does.
I get it. People like home runs. He's got 4 home runs. He's got more home runs than Brandon Crawford. Xander Bogaerts just hit his first one last night. But, I mean,
sure.
Let's be real here. What's his OBP? Under 300. And the weird thing to me is, if you actually look at his defensive numbers, they've regressed terribly over the past 2 years. He's not even an elite level defender at shortstop, and you can get into how much you trust defensive metrics and, you know, what is real after a certain sample size, but all the numbers over the past 2 seasons say that he hasn't even been that good defensively. He's solid, and you'd like to have him moving him around, but as an everyday player, man, that'll get exposed pretty quick.
How, just both of you, how comfortable are you with defensive metrics and in terms of their utilization, and how often do you or would you use them in pieces that you write?
I'm a numbers guy, so I like to reference them and to refer to them. Do I trust the defensive metrics that we have out there completely? No, I don't. I think there's some interesting aspects of them to pick and choose at, but I wouldn't say this guy is ranked number one defensively, therefore he is the best defensive player at whatever position. With Ryan Goins, the metrics for him over the last 5 or 6 weeks at shortstop haven't been great. To my eye, he looks to have made a lot of the good plays that the shortstop needs to make, and maybe he's not making the extraordinary plays. That seems to be where some of the drawbacks are. I think that especially, and I know he's a guy that comes into the season and comes into his Blue Jays career as having a reputation as being a defensive all-star, a guy that if he had a bat would be playing every day because he is so good defensively. But in terms of the conversation about the metrics themselves, I think that they're interesting to look at, but I don't take them. I would take them with a grain of salt.
Definitely. I think it's a reference point. I think when you can look at it and you can compare Ryan Goins to certain other players in those defensive metrics and the range factors, they hate him. So he makes the plays he gets to. And I'm no, that's the thing. You got to look at the eyeball test and take it with a grain of salt and look at the metrics and take those with a grain of salt and then come out and see where you stand. But when you look at Troy Tulowitzki's numbers, obviously Troy Tulowitzki has historically been a great defensive shortstop, does it in a much different way. And he has these long, lanky strides, never wastes a step and things like that. And when you look at Ryan Goins, the numbers still bear out that Troy Tulowitzki is an elite defensive shortstop. The numbers don't say the same thing about Ryan Goins. 2 years ago, yeah, he was plus-plus defensively. You tell me why that's changed.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is to that question. The one thing that comes to mind off the top of my head, and he's not old by any stretch of the imagination, but I think people don't realize that Ryan Goins, everybody refers to Ryan Goins as, oh, he's a good kid. He's 29. Like, he'll be 30. He's an 88 baby. He'll be 30 next year. Like, this notion that he's some 23 or 24-year-old who's a prospect who, if you just bring him along a little more, maybe he figures some things out offensively. He's at that age where he absolutely is what he is, to use the worn-out cliche.
Yeah, right? If you think Ryan Goins has taken a tremendous step in becoming a starting caliber player at this point in his career, I mean, that's a giant leap. He's a nice utility guy, and even that's a debate at this point.
I think he's a good defensive player, so everyone always wants that player to blossom into an offensive player, and he hits from the left side. So anytime you get that combination, and he's bald, it's just one of those things where that's kind of those are the criteria to building a fan favorite that people hope blossoms into an all-star, right, Scotty?
That's why he's my favorite, man.
There you go. All right, you can commiserate with him. Scotty Mitchell, TSN's TSN 1050's Blue Jays reporter, Israel Fair, who is the Blue Jays reporter for The Athletic Toronto, with me for the baseball roundtable. We'll come back on the other side. Bautista's red hot. Travis is red hot. Donaldson Tulowitzki coming back into the lineup. We'll touch on more of that. We will discuss Rougned Odor, and we will circle back to this notion of the Blue Jays and where they stand in the AL East, but we'll take it from other teams' perspectives. We've seen the Yankees kind of go 5-5 in their last 10 and look just okay. What's going on with Masahiro Tanaka? The Baltimore Orioles have begun to slump, although 3-7 in their last 10, two of those wins came against the Blue Jays. And what's going on with David Price and his minor league rehab outings? We'll touch on all of that. Scotty Mitchell, Israel Fair with me until 2:30. The Baseball Roundtable is brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln, and it continues in a moment. The Scott MacArthur Show, TSN 1050.
But very optimistic, given that we're going to be making some big roster changes in the coming week. So, tomorrow we'll make two additions. Over the next week could be two or three more additions, and all very integral players to our success.
That is the general manager of your Toronto Blue Jays, Ross Atkins, appearing on Overdrive yesterday afternoon. Those two roster changes he referenced tomorrow is now today, and will be Josh Donaldson and Troy Tulowitzki returning to the lineup. And this will be the first time since, about a week into the season that manager John Gibbons will be able to field his full positional lineup. And Jay Happ threw the minor league rehab game yesterday. Francisco Lariano is coming along. Aaron Sanchez is longer than that. But even if you can get back to 4/5 of your regular rotation being healthy, and you have Joe Biagini as your five, if you want to put it that way, I think you can look at that and say, all right, we should be able to do something here. Scott MacArthur, Scott Mitchell, Israel Fear, the Baseball Roundtable until 2:30 here on the Scott MacArthur Show, and our conversation is brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln. We got about 3 minutes here, guys, and we'll come back and deal with the Odor stuff at the top of the 2 o'clock hour. I want to talk Jay Happ very quickly here. What do you think happens next? There is a TBD beside the starting pitcher's name for Tuesday's game against Cincinnati, which would be Happ's day. Does he need another minor league rehab start? Do you think that's where they'll go? Or do they figure if he's going to throw 75 or 80 pitches, he may as well do it at the big league level? Let's get him back and get him into a game against the Reds.
That would be my thought. But, I mean, Ross Atkins has already said, potentially three. So that leads me to believe that they want to take it easy on him and not rush him back. So, I mean, it seems to be either him next Tuesday or Matt Latos, unless they want to... Yeah, I know.
Yes, I made a face, which is bad on radio. Because
trust me.
If this was on TV, people would understand that's what you're reacting to.
All the
to.
Listeners could feel that face as well. Yeah. They're making the same face, probably.
Can I crack the Latos intolerance joke before you go on?
No.
Okay.
No. Or,
well, I did.
Or the Cat Latos jokes. No, nothing like that. I would be hesitant to bring him back just the way he walked off the mound the last time. I mean, it did not look good. I mean, he knew something was wrong in there, and you always worry about a setback. I would tend to err on the side of caution and give him one more start and deal with what you have to deal with on Tuesday.
30 seconds.
I think so. I think they're going to be very cautious, just given how that injury played out, how initially when he tried to come back and he had to shelf it for about a week and a half because it didn't feel right. And you hear guys talk about this a lot. There's a difference between throwing those pitches in those minor league rehab starts and pitching against major league quality hitters. There is another level that guys go to, another gear that guys go to, and I don't think you want to risk it.
Yeah, and they mash mistakes at the big league level. If you're not back and you're not on, you'll pay for it. And remember this, too. The Jays don't have another off day for 2 weeks. It's the Thursday in between the Oakland and Seattle Road Series. This 10-game homestand and then the three games in Oakland, there is not an off day in between any of those days. So once you're back in the rotation, you're back every fifth day. Scott Mitchell, TSN Blue Jays insider and reporter. Israel Fair, Blue Jays reporter for The Athletic Toronto, with me in studio until 2:30. The Baseball Roundtable brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln. We'll continue with a little stinky talk. Rougned Odor in town with the Rangers. We'll get into that, what may or may not happen, and we'll do it next. The Scott MacArthur Show, TSN 1050.